Julian Ovenden has made his name acting in England, done some musicals at the Donmar. He's also acted with the RSC. He then made a fairly big name for himself on television in programmes like Foyle's War and The Foresight Saga, and all of a sudden he's popped up on Broadway. So, Julian, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Thank you.
Do you want to explain how you've made this incredible transformation so that all of a sudden you're taking over the Matthew Broderick role in acting as a foil to Nathan Lane on Broadway?
I don't know really how I got here. I mean, I think that's always the case with jobs. You know, they happen completely by coincidence and things that other people turn down or complete chance, really. And this came up... I was working in Los Angeles, and I heard through my manager that she sent me the script, and I was interested in it, but I think they were already offering it to other more established actors. But I was fairly bullish about it. I decided that I'd fly myself to New York and try and.
Okay. We're in the dressing room at the Booth Theatre on Broadway. I perhaps ought to explain.
Yeah. That's the sound guys just checking that everything's working. So I flew myself over, and I kind of banged on the door, and they let me audition, and then I got the job, rather miraculously, and so I've been here for 5 months, and it's been fantastic. Amazing experience. Completely, I can't really believe I'm, you know, every time I turn up at the theatre, I can't really believe I'm doing it, really. I'm working with such a great actor and in a great theatre on Broadway. It's amazing. Yeah.
The play that you're in is Simon Gray's Butley, so it's following the theme of pretty much every straight play on Broadway these days has major British connections, because the other big one at the moment is David Hare's The Vertical Hour. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the play itself? And you're playing Joey, who is, shall we say, a friend of Ben Buckley.
Well, it's a bit of a grey area, really. The whole play is a grey area. I think that's what I quite like about Simon Gray's writing. You have to work hard with it. The language is wonderful, wonderfully inventive and colourful and dynamic, but the characters are never stereotypes and every cliches, and it's less easily accessible than stuff perhaps by Alan Bennett or David Hare, which is more, shall we say, commercial, topical maybe. And this play is a character study, really, of a man's, you know, professor of English, and his sort of decline and his inability to face up to his own nature, and he sort of pushes everyone away from him, including my character and his estranged wife, and the students that he's supposed to be teaching. And it's quite a complicated. Well, it's a very simple premise in one sense, but it's also quite complicated because the audience is sort of thrown into this soup at the beginning of the evening, and they sort of have to work out what the relationship is between all these people, because it's not immediately clear whether Butley, the professor, has had a relationship, what kind of relationship he has with his colleague Joey, and how long he's lived with his wife, and is he gay, is he straight, and it's also very literary. There's a lot of literary allusions. And so it can be quite complicated. I think for American audiences, they find it sometimes a little, mystifying. But I think generally it's where we sort of win them over. What I like about Simon Gray's writing is that he's very in touch, I think, with the human condition, like any good playwright should be. And he portrays it, I think, without any kind of. He portrays it as it is. You know, what's that artist who, you know, what do I want to say? You know, portrait artists who kind of
I've just been at the Whitney this afternoon looking at Edward Hopper, who's probably not the right person.
No, not the right person, but is it... who do I want to say? I want to say Freud, but it's not...
Lucian Freud?
Lucian Freud. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's like no, you sort of no, there's no makeup. Mm. You know, there's no cosmetics.
Very much warts and all.
Yeah, in a way it is, and the characters are really able to breathe, I think, and for an actor, it's wonderful to have words like that. You know, when you do terminus, you generally don't meet that kind of writing in television or film, and often not in plays. So it's wonderful to be able to give them those words to speak.
Was Simon Gray involved in this production?
Yes, he was. He came over for the previews, and we had a rather, unlike the West End where you don't have many previews, here we had a good sort of 3 weeks, which is wonderful, really. I was like tired of the play already, I hadn't even opened. But it gives you a great advantage, because, especially with a play like this, where the audience reaction changes from night to night, and sometimes it's a kind of very, very comedic feel, and sometimes it's like you're playing Peer Gynt or something, or some tragedy. And so it was great to be able to have all those kind of differing reactions and be able to try different things out, you know, with a preview audience before we sort of opened fully. But he was here for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and was able to kind of, you know, give his opinions, and which was very useful and lovely to meet him as well, you know.
This is kind of the oddest play for Broadway, because it's about 35 years old, it's written by an Englishman, it's about Duns in Cambridge.
Yes.
And you're saying that American audiences have reacted favourably and positively towards it and understood roughly what was going on, because typically nowadays everything on Broadway is either a big budget musical or a mid-sized budget musical.
I suppose so. I mean, there are things like the Stoppard trilogy that's on at the moment, and the David Hare, of course. But you're right. The general climate of theatre, both in the West End and Broadway, is leaning towards more commercial products, because, you know, the theatre is now a big money spinner, you know, with the big budget musicals. There's a lot of money to be made, and so it is, I suppose, a strange choice, but it's not when you consider who they've got to play the part. Nathan Lane, who I only saw him, you know, live in the producers, and I, you know, was obviously, like everyone else who saw it, was kind of amazed by just the dexterity and it was just brilliant. It was just, no other words for it, it was just a brilliant performance. And I was very interested to see how, one, he would cope with an English accent, and two, with a completely different style of work. And, you know, there aren't many English actors who could do that. Let alone Americans, and I think he's a pretty extraordinary actor.
He certainly gets the audience on his side, probably actually before they come into the theatre, to be fair, but he gets all the sort of stage work at the beginning, sort of dumb show which wins everybody over, and is an amazing performance. And his English accent, I'd give it about 95 out of 100. He's occasionally goes slightly wrong, but very, very good.
I'd say it was one of the best English accents I've ever heard. And it's hard. I've spent a lot. This is the first time I've been able to use my accent for the first time in about 2 years, and I know how hard it is to do. But it's easier for an English actor to do American. It's very, very hard for some reason, phonetically or the musculature of the English accent. For other accents to try and copy it, it's very difficult because there's more of a tune to the English accent. The American accent is much flatter, and he's able to do that very well. He's a very good mimic. But beyond that, I think he wanted to do something that would, because he did The Odd Couple after the producers, and he wanted to do something that was much less, comedic's not the right word, but it's much sort of deeper, I suppose, something with depth. And there's a danger, people come into the theatre expecting a performance that is full of musical comedy kind of antics, and they don't really get it. And I think some people find, you know, that's part of the reason why some people are like, you know, they're slightly wrong-footed. But that's just the nature of, you know, people, who he is and what the play is and where we are, really.
Is he an easy man to work with?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a true, true professional. I'd say that he's I don't think I've ever worked with anyone who is 100% the whole time. He never sort of soft pedals anything. And in rehearsal, that's great. It's a great discipline to get into. Something I sometimes don't do. You know, for rehearsal, sometimes you kind of ease over things. Sometimes if it's tough emotionally or you're feeling tired, but he never does that. He always plays it fully, and that's something that I've learned, you know, from him. But he's very very open and very nothing's ever kind of, you know, set down, dictated to. You know, it's very much a partnership. And for me, it's great because, you know, I spend an hour and a half on stage with him, an hour and three quarters or whatever it is. So, I mean, it really, it's a partnership, which is wonderful, you know.
Let's now take you back a little bit, because, fine, you're on Broadway, this is wonderful, it's kind of the peak of a career, even though you're extremely young, so a long, long way to go yet. Yeah. You, I think, studied at Oxford to start with and then went onto the stage. You want to tell us a little bit about how your career developed?
Well, yes, I kind of became an actor sort of as the result of a left turn, really. I studied music for most of my life. I was a chorister, and then I...
Page check.
That's the tano again. And then I got a
music. Can you head up to Nathan's dressing room, please? Oh. Can you head to Nathan's dressing room?
That's just to show you that I am actually in the dressing room and I am doing a play. It's not a lie. I got a music scholarship, and then I got a scholarship to Oxford to study music, and then I was going to take singing along professionally. And I decided that I didn't want to do another few years in conservatoire or, you know, doing that sort of business, because I was just eager to get out there and start working. But I decided I think I needed a year of acting training. So I went to Webber Douglas, and then I landed a part as soon as I got out with the RSC, doing King Lear with Nigel Hawthorne. Which was an extraordinary experience in many ways. I met some amazing people, and that was a good 9 months. That was, and then after that, I got a Michael Grand just cast me in Sometimes Merrily We Roll Along at the Donmar, which kind of, you know, sort of put me a little bit on the map, I suppose. You know, it was a lead role in a great theatre with a, you know, fantastic director. And it was an amazing success. Do you want my whole career?
You then did Grand Hotel, I think, also at the Donmar.
Yeah, how
did you make the transition from stage to television?
It's quite hard, I have to say. It's quite hard to make any kind of transition in this career because people are very, very short-sighted. There are a lot of actors now. I mean, you know, too many really for the business. And I've tried very hard in the 7 years that I've been working to constantly change what I do, to give myself a foundation from which to build a sort of a varied career as much as possible. That sometimes led me to turn down things that I would have done otherwise. It's led me to be still horrifically poor, and it's led me to America, and it's led me, you know, to do television and stuff. And I was lucky enough to do a pilot. It was a sort of pilot for ITV, Foyle's War, which turned into a great success, and that was a fantastic experience because, again, I was working with a great actor, Michael Kitchen, who's a very accomplished, well, he's a very accomplished stage actor before, you know, he did all his stuff on the screen, but he's a wonderful screen actor. Very, very economical and precise, and I learned a lot about screen acting from him.
Yeah.
That's my dresser, Sunday.
Hello.
Hi, Sunday.
Sorry.
It's all right. And that turned into, you know, that turned into a great sort of 3-4 seasons series of films for ITV, And then I did, you know, other bits and bobs on other different, the Foresight Saga, which again was a great cast of actors.
And then how did you make the jump from the UK to the States?
I decided that I wanted to do something different, you know, having done a bit of costume drama, and there was a lot of material on the BBC and ITV which I just wasn't right for, sort of urban, sort of gritty sort of stuff that I just, you know, I wasn't my thing. And also, there are so many good actors in England that I wasn't getting the parts that I really wanted to play. You know, I mean, there are. I can name 10 really very fine actors of my generation, or just a little bit older than me, who were much more likely to get the roles that I'd like to get. So I decided that I'd do something different, and went to the States and sort of tried my hand, and ended up doing a series over there, and a couple of pilots, and you know, it's been hard in a way, because you sort of start again, and it's even, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people trying to, and the business is completely different over there, but it's given me a completely different experience. It's made me play parts that I would never have played in England, and you know, I look at it as though, you know, when we had the rep system in England, which we don't really have anymore. I mean, the National, I suppose, is the closest we get to a repertory company. You know, you'd have. I remember speaking to the actress Geraldine James about this. We were doing an episode of Poirot. I think it was it last year or 2 years ago, and she was telling me how, you know, how she started out and where she did rep for the first 2 years of her acting career, and you know, they did 30 plays in 2 years or 40 plays, but you're doing, you know, The Seagull followed by Tale of Two Cities followed by Dick Whittington followed by, you know, Hay Fever, you know, it's, you know, you get the whole full, and to be able to do that, I think, is so wonderful, because now you just play who you are a lot of the time, you know, to be actually asked to transform and to do different things is quite rare, unless you're a very, very gifted stage, you know, you're known for, you know, Michael Sheen or someone like that, who's known for transforming himself into these different characters. Because there are, you know, if you want a Scotsman who's got, you know, who's got ginger hair and rides a motorcycle, you can find one, generally. there's not the call for that kind of I suppose versatility, and that's what I came into the business. One of the reasons I came into the business for was to do, you know, to do lots of different things. I don't know what my point is, really. I've lost track of what I'm saying. I'm boring myself to death.
you're interesting me, so it's not all bad, I can assure you. So having done all of this, done everything everywhere, do you know what's coming next? Because Butley has another few weeks to run at this stage. We're just after Christmas, yeah. 2006.
Yeah. No, I haven't a clue, really. That's the kind of joy and the despair that I'm faced with come in 3 weeks' time. I don't know. I there's a few things. I mean, I think that I might go and... There's a last Foyles War that I might go and... Because I sort of left to do other things about a year and a half ago. So I think it'd be nice to go back and do the last one. And there's a musical that I think I might be workshopping with Jonathan Kent, which is a collaboration between Schoenberg and Bublil, you know, oh dear, I'm embarrassing myself, and Michel Legrand, the French, you know, jazz composer.
So those are the guys behind Les Miserables.
That's correct, yeah. And so there might be a workshop of a new musical in the spring, and possibly a film as well, based on the opera Così Van Tutte, a sort of romantic comedy based on that. So there are a few things, but nothing immediately. So if anyone's out there, you know, needing. Listen to me, terrible.
I'm used to people doing that.
You should hear. I mean, Nathan's like, we were about to go on yesterday. And he was saying, I've got no idea what I'm doing next. I hate it. He was like, you know, so it's kind of comforting in a way to hear people like that are in the same situation. You just, you know, it's a bit of a black hole already.
Do you have aspirations of Hollywood, which seems to be the one area you haven't gone for yet?
Well, I've worked there, I mean, in television. But in terms of films, I haven't really made any films. So, yes, it does appeal to me, of course. But to kind of break into that area is very hard, really. And I've tried, you know, I auditioned for, a fair few films. But, it's like a vicious circle. You know, you can't get a film unless you've done a film, really. And then you have to be lucky enough for all the 200 other film stars to kind of say no to the role, and then you get a chance. And so I'm still waiting for that opportunity. We'll see. I don't I'm very happy with the way things have gone, really. But I'm always on the lookout for something, you know, for the new experience, really. For me, that's what it's all about, really. It's not really about Hollywood as such. Having been there for a while, and you get to it's very quickly you understand that the whole thing is a complete sham. In terms of the showbiz glitz and glamour, and it's a business, and that doesn't really interest me, that kind of whole side of it. The side of working with great film directors does very much so.
You seem to have been successful in everything else you've done. Have you had any resting periods at all?
I've had sort of months off here and there. But I've been fairly lucky, you know. I've always, you know, always wanted to be busier. But I like doing different things, really. So, and singing is something that I'm doing more of now. I tried very hard not to do too much, too many musicals after Merrily, because I didn't want to be pigeonholed. I'm doing a club act in a week and a half's time at a venue in New York. So that'll be interesting. That's sort of like an hour of just singing with a piano. And I'd like to do more of that. That's sort of something that I enjoy. And maybe another musical here, which would be fantastic. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, Julian, thank you very much indeed. You seem to have had a remarkably variegated or varied career already, and it seems likely it will continue.
Well, I hope so, but you never know.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.